Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Do you love a good story about a real bad guy? I'm talking about the worst of the worst. If so, I have the perfect podcast show for you. It's called Dictators, and you can hear new episodes every Tuesday. Here are hosts Kate and Richard to tell you more.
Thank you. Every Tuesday in our new show, Dictators, Richard and I examine the reign of a real-life tyrant, exploring the unique conditions that allowed them to seize control.
Hear more about the men who claimed to love their country, but were intricately responsible for killing millions of their own people. In this special clip from our first episode, learn about Benito Mussolini's transformation from Italian Superman to despised despot. If you want to listen to the full episode, follow Dictators free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Great War ended in 1918, it ushered in a global depression, both economically and socially. The soldiers who survived came home to countries they didn't recognize, countries with new names and new borders, racked by new fears. Even for the victors, a return to stability seemed impossible.
There was a sense that everything was broken. Democracy had failed, capitalism had failed, socialism was failing too. Nihilism was the only philosophy that still made sense.
In Europe, the young people who came of age during this time were called the Generation of 1914. France called them the Génération du Feu, the gunfire generation. In Britain and America, they were known as the Lost Generation.
In that kind of mass desperation, certain things can slip through the cracks. The people let their leaders consolidate power. Let them blame foreigners. Let them do away with a civil liberty or two.
They trusted in despots because there really wasn't a better alternative.
Until before they realized it, the apocalypse they were trying to avoid was right there on their doorstep.
Those are the circumstances that led to the rise of totalitarianism after World War I, to the rise of dictators.
Welcome to Dictators, a new Parcast original. I'm Richard.
And I'm Kate. With this series, we want to go deep into the minds of some of history's most hated despots.
We all know about the atrocities committed by the likes of Hitler and Stalin. In the United States, we're familiar with longtime American adversaries such as Fidel Castro and Kim Jong-un.
On Dictators, we'll trace the psychological, cultural, and spiritual influences that transformed these individuals.
Either they were born psychopathic, or they were hardened by circumstance. Without fail, each went from wanting to save their country to destroying it.
You can find all episodes of Dictators and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Dictators for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Dictators in the search bar.
At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help.
For our first 6 episodes, we're starting with a bang as we explore the lives of World War II's 3 worst dictators: Benito Mussolini, Joseph Stalin, and Adolf Hitler.
Today, we'll see how Mussolini harnessed disparate social elements such as socialism, nationalism, and futurism to forge a new belief system, fascism. This hateful ideology would be his chief tool in portraying himself as the ideal Italian man. And it would go on to inspire an even greater evil.
Next week, we'll see how an alliance with that greater evil, Nazi Germany, led to Mussolini's downfall. Mussolini is often thought of as Hitler's incompetent lackey. His fellow fascist, who lost the war in Italy and died a day earlier on April 28, 1945, his body hung in a square and spit upon.
But that is the modern perception. In his time, Mussolini was considered a swashbuckling heartthrob, a master politician. He rose to power in Italy years before Hitler became the face of totalitarianism. Despite destroying civil liberties in his country and exiling thousands of Italian Jews to concentration camps, Mussolini's people loved him. And some still do.
But how could the people of any time view a monster in such a romantic light? And how has his global reputation fallen from that of the ultimate leader to the ultimate stooge?
In order to answer these questions, we must trace Mussolini's time as a socialist agitator in Switzerland to his years as a newspaper man, to his crafty rise to prime minister.
Mussolini's entire life was a self-defeating journey to fulfill a masculine ideal. He was born on July 29, 1883. His father, Alessandro Mussolini, was his first role model. According to Spartacus Educational, Mussolini once told a reporter, "I come of peasant stock. My father was a blacksmith. He gave me strength."
A young Mussolini would work the forge with his father, sweat dripping, sparks singeing his skin.
Researcher Andrea Sangiovanni describes the traditional image of Italian steelwork as a completely masculine world where the natural characteristics of man, strength, courage, leadership, honor, aggression, are praised to excess. Mussolini picked up on this, learning to be strong to a fault, to express only the most dominant part of himself.
He was taught that a man worked hard, that he and his father were the laboring peasantry, and across the country, in Rome, there was a king and a church that reaped the benefits of their labor and didn't work at all. Even worse, there were Austrian kings to the north who ruled over land and people that were rightfully Italian.
Young Mussolini imagined these rulers like fantasy despots, almost inhuman. Every day at the forge, his father filled his mind with ideas about a revolution of workers just like them. Men like them. Strong workers who made up the real Italy, who would one day inherit the earth.
Mussolini loved his father, and he wanted nothing more than to live up to these ideals. This belief system, socialism with a little bit of nationalism, would entrance and beguile him throughout the rest of his life.
But as much as he admired his father, he was also confused by him. He talked about strength and honor, but Mussolini gradually became aware that Alessandro didn't exactly personify those things.
His father's main focus in life was not on his work or his family, but his mistress, who he often spent money on while Mussolini, his two siblings, and his mother lived in a small home eating very basic meals.
This engendered a toxic dichotomy within the young boy. He had a father telling him how to act like a man, but had no strong male role model to actually show him what that looked like.
And so he would spend his life trying to decide for himself how a man should act, while nursing a selfish streak that would topple a republic. Because if his own father wasn't going to look out for the young Mussolini, then who would?
His mother noticed a growing anger inside of him. In 1892, when Mussolini was 9, she sent him to Catholic boarding school in the hopes that the priests would be able to calm him. The opposite was true. The Catholics were largely anti-socialists. They took out their political beliefs on Mussolini, the son of a socialist.
This included withholding food from him and forcing him to sleep in the dog kennel. His selfish streak deepened as he felt that truly the whole world was out to get him.
At the same time, some of the masculine ideals he had picked up from his father were being reinforced.
Catholic doctrine emphasized the differences between men and women, how men were meant to be masculine leaders and women feminine mothers. This idea was driven home by the simple fact that it was an all-boys school with male-only teachers.
Mussolini's growing toxic masculinity famously boiled over one day in the schoolyard when Mussolini stabbed a classmate in the hand.
And so his picture of the ideal man continued to fill out. The ideal man was a strong, hard worker like his dad had taught him. But as he had picked up from Catholic school, aggression was a vital piece to the puzzle.
He would never forget how the anti-socialist priests had treated him. Their pettiness, their need to exert control over a child, was anything but masculine.
He figured that his father's disdain for the church in Rome was well placed, that the Catholic Church leadership was just as weak as the priests at his school. And so he decided that whatever the ideal man was, he wasn't Catholic.
Mussolini managed to survive school. In fact, he excelled at it. He could now express his burgeoning ideals through scathing treatises and impassioned speeches.
In 1900, at the age of 17, he was about to finish school when he and the rest of Italy learned of the assassination of their king, Umberto I.
The king was killed by an anarchist socialist member of the working class. This would have inspired the young Mussolini. His father's worldview was being validated. The real men, the working men, were rising up against the parasite upper class.
King Umberto was only the second monarch to rule over a united Italy. He was hated by working-class Italians for his support of violent worker suppression. He had also embroiled the country in wars of conquest in Somalia and Ethiopia, the latter of which ended in failure.
On top of that, many Italians hated Umberto for his support of the Triple Alliance, which was a military alliance with Austria, the country's former enemy. The failure and ultimate murder of this monarch confirmed for Mussolini that socialism was the right philosophy.
But just because they were right didn't mean they had power. A new monarch was crowned, Victor Emmanuel III, Umberto's son. Mussolini worried that he would be drafted into the army and forced to fight in some war driven by this new king.
He would not die for someone he didn't even consider to be a real man. And so in 1902, after about a year working as an elementary school teacher, a 19-year-old Mussolini fled to Switzerland, hoping to find other socialists, other real men.
This separation from his country ironically allowed him time to consider what exactly it meant to be Italian.
In Switzerland, he saw many of the same problems as at home. That country was already the location of many of the large banks it's famous for today, and there was a large lower class that saw none of that money. Switzerland was thus a hotbed for socialism. Mussolini met with socialist leaders, wrote for socialist newspapers, and clashed with the police.
This playground gave him enough distance from Italian politics to think about them objectively. The country had been united in 1861 under a new monarchy and with a prime minister and parliament. It was supposed to be a new dawn for Italy, even a return to the days of the glorious Roman Empire 1500 years before.
But this unification had meant nothing for the average Italian. They still had to toil, some in factories, others in fields and mines.
And in 1902, a majority of Italians still weren't even allowed to vote. Clearly, unification just meant that the top 1% now centrally controlled the labor and product of the working class.
In Switzerland, Mussolini learned from leaders of socialist thought, men like Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky, two founders of the Russian Revolution and devout Marxists. They helped him hone the idea of what Italian socialism should look like, the rewards of Italian labor in the hands of Italian workers and no one else. Not the king, not parliament, not the Austrians.
But while men like Karl Marx were calling for self-rule, Mussolini never seemed to settle on an exact prescription for what a modern government should look like.
His belief system was heavy with contradiction. He wrote that socialism means the elevation and purification of the individual conscience, and its achievement will be the result of a long series of efforts.
This seemed to suggest that he believed in the combined efforts of society as a whole, rather than the triumphs of the individual. But he also admired the idea of the best and brightest pushing to the top. Mussolini read Darwin and absorbed his message of struggling against tradition, authority, dogma.
This was survival of the fittest philosophy. The idea that people in power are in power because of certain traits that make them better suited for it. Mussolini couldn't believe in both the collective achievements of society and the survival of the fittest. History would tell which side he leaned toward.
His racial politics were similarly convoluted. Mussolini hated the nationalist, racist philosophies arising in Germany, but at the same time, he spoke of an Italian soul and was dismissive of their Slavic neighbors to the northeast.
So he didn't like an emphasis on national identity unless it was Italian national identity. And he didn't like racism, but he had certain racial prejudices.
It was almost as if the masculine ideals instilled by his father and sharpened in Catholic school would never release their hold. Because as much as he admired the worker-focused ideals of socialism, he also seemed to find socialism somewhat feminine.
Many socialists preached the idea of a global society free of borders, where everyone was equal. This sounded like fanciful nonsense to him. Italy needed to become a world power. That was the only way for him to show the world that the hard labor ideals of his youth were superior.
The only way to show the world that Italians were true men, that he was a true man.
His image of the ideal man was now the image of the ideal Italian man. Strong, aggressive, not Catholic, socialist, but only insofar as you maintained a sense of masculinity and national identity.
In 1904, a 21-year-old Mussolini was expelled from Switzerland and forced to return to Italy after inspiring multiple riots against police and falsifying documents.
He returned to his home country with a new vision. He would inspire the rural working class that he had been a part of. He would do this by playing on the masculine ideals of hard work and painting the ruling class as effete, out-of-touch parasites.
He would paint the Catholic Church with the same brush. And his fellow socialists Well, hopefully they would go along with his emphasis on an Italian identity. Italian product in Italian hands. Not a part of some larger European collective that exploited their labor just as the king was currently doing.
His goal was to inspire socialist revolution in Italy. But by the time he was done, there would hardly be an Italy left at all.
To find out what happens next, listen to Dictators free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.